You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
A Broadway show, an audience at the Oscars you're listening to? No. What you're hearing is a little mix of crowds at some of the many GOP presidential debates this year. As one of our listeners called it, these debates so far have taken on a touch of a pep rally feel. But at the first debate in Florida last Monday, NBC host Brian Williams laid down some ground rules for the candidates and for the audience. Listen.
We've asked our invited guests here this evening to withhold their applause, any verbal reactions to what they hear on stage, so as to ensure this is about the four candidates here tonight and what they have to say.
Now, candidate Newt Gingrich was not happy about that. On Tuesday, after the debate, he complained to Fox and Friends host Gretchen Carlson.
Yeah, I wish in retrospect I protested when Brian Williams took him out of it because I think it's wrong. And I think he took him out of it because the media is terrified.
Now, why is Newt so upset about this audience reaction to debates? Of course, Newt Gingrich has gotten plenty of audience reaction to some of his zingers and attacks, and they've served him well. But it makes us want to ask, what role does clapping or booing and laughing at a debate have on those debates, on our perception of the candidates, and how people come away from the debate, and how the media covers them? Well, joining us is Janet Brown, Executive Director of the Commission on Presidential Debates. Janet has served in that role for more than 25 years and has helped set the rules for numerous debates, both with and without audiences. She joins us from Washington, D.C. Janet, good morning.
Good morning, Todd.
It was Brian Williams' sort of ban on audience participation the other night in Florida the first time this has happened?
To my knowledge, it's the first time it's happened during this primary season, but he's following the same guidelines that we've used in our debates going back to 92.
Which are what?
No audience participation of any kind. The moderator makes that clear from the start, and the reason is simple. The debates are for the benefit of the tens of millions of people who are watching and listening at home, not for the hundreds that are in the debate hall. Any interference that makes it difficult to understand what the candidates are saying then makes it hard for the audience at home to really take maximum benefit from this, which is to learn about the candidates and their positions. So it's subtracting time from the candidates, and it's basically depriving the public of an opportunity to learn about them.
Those rules seem to be adhered to more faithfully in the general election when it's just the two main candidates than in the primaries. Is that the case? That's my perception.
Well, it's certainly been the case in all of our debates. We had an experience in 1988, which was our first year, with a couple of debates where the audience decided to participate. It became a very big distraction. It's an additional task for the moderator, who's already got a very big job. And again, it takes time away from what is already a very limited period to learn about candidates' positions on an awful lot of important issues. It's conceivable if you let audience noise start, you could lose an entire question and answer exchange.
And yet, it's kind of easy to see why somebody like Newt Gingrich, who, because of his wit and his ability to debate, got great crowd reaction with some of his zingers criticizing either the media, CNN's John King, other candidates. It makes sense why Newt Gingrich would make an issue out of this. It served him.
The question becomes, who are you addressing? If the candidates want to address supporters, needless to say, there are plenty of opportunities in a campaign to do that, in campaign stops, pep rallies, whatever. A debate is the only time when you have all of the candidates answering the same question in a neutral forum. And it's our belief, and we commend what Brian Williams did, that the point at that stage is to have the candidates address the home audience and to let them hear the responses in an unfiltered way with no interference by noise or anything else.
Well, of course, Janet Brown, this phenomenon is nothing new. You've been doing this job for 25 years as executive director for of the Commission on Presidential Debates. So the sound I'm about to play you, which we put together here, a little montage, is going to sound familiar to you. And I want to get you to react to this brief history of audience reaction at presidential debates.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
I will not make age an issue of this campaign. I am not going to exploit my opponent's youth and inexperience.
It's going to be the Joe Isuzu of American politics.
Would you like to take some time to respond to that?
No, but I will.
Janet Brown, those moments are familiar, but none of those moments would be familiar. You are no Jack Kennedy, Joe Isuzu of politics. Those wouldn't be familiar if the crowd hadn't reacted and approved. That's why it sticks in our memory, the laugh line, the zinger.
That's right. And obviously, you can't have a live audience and tell them that they are not, under any circumstance, going to be allowed to respond to something that prompts an instant, visceral response. One of those is a reference to 88, as I mentioned, and it prompted a lot of audience response, and then the moderator moved forward. The question is, are you going to allow for applause or booing after every single response, which is going to start to take up a lot of time, and there's no question it's going to influence the home audience that effectively is listening to an applause meter. It's interesting to remember that the first presidential debates, Kennedy-Nixon, were held in TV studios with no audience at all.
Yes.
The feeling now is that it is more comfortable for candidates to be speaking in a room where they are looking at a small number of people, including their close family and friends, because it actually warms up the exchange. But we believe that once you allow that group to get into the act, that you've added an entire participatory group that does not have a place when the home audience is trying to understand what these candidates stand for.
And some of it strikes me, Janet Brown, may also have to do with the size of the audience. A large theater where it might be a larger crowd, more opportunity for group reaction versus a television studio where maybe there are only 100 participants in a town hall might be different. But we just played played you a montage of laugh lines. There's another side to this. Here's a little montage we put together, most of it more recent, of a different kind of audience participation that's been prevalent in this Republican primary. Listen.
Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda have been explicit. They have been explicit, and they wrote and said that we attacked America because you had bases on our Holy Land in Saudi Arabia. You do not give Palestinians a fair treatment, and you have been bombing
the progress that's been made for gay and lesbian soldiers in the military.
Yeah, Governor Romney, your father was born in Mexico. You still have family there. Yet you have taken the hardest line of anyone on this stage.
Janet Brown,
on immigration.
Any difference there? Those, of course, were boo lines, not laugh lines. Any difference in the effect on our perception of these candidates or what we take away from debates, laugh lines versus heckling, boo lines?
I'm not an expert in analyzing that kind of thing, Todd, but I can't believe that the home audience isn't taking their cues from that. It's interfering with their ability to hear those candidates, whether they agree with them or not. It is definitely going to be a factor in how you filter what you thought you just heard. It's increasingly popular in our country to voice an opinion, sometimes quite rudely, especially if one can be anonymous. That is a part of what's going on here, and it just seems to the commission that by the time you get to the last few weeks of a campaign, which is where our debates are held, that kind of interference really should not occur, so that you can hear the candidates in a respectful and substantive way.
We will be interested to hear the difference between these Republican primary debates, audience reaction, and the overall feel, and the debates in the general election when you're in charge, Janet Brown, as Executive Director of the Commission on Presidential Debates. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.